We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This season, all your favorites have one home for the holidays. Yours with Disney Plus.
Merry Christmas!
Moana, Woody, Buzz, Captain Marvel, Darth Vader, and Homer will all be there, so make room. Make Disney Plus your home for the holidays, streaming Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, Nat Geo, and 30 seasons of The Simpsons. That's something to celebrate.
Merry Christmas to you!
All these and more now streaming. Go to DisneyPlus.com to sign up now.
Don't miss the Xfinity Beyond Black Friday event. Get $100 back on a package that's right for you. That's a gift. You'll unwrap amazing speed and Wi-Fi coverage from America's best internet provider. Plus, the Emmy Award-winning X1 voice remote with Xfinity X1. The easiest all-in-one entertainment experience. A gift in a gift in a gift. Now that's simple, easy, awesome. The Xfinity Beyond Black Friday event ends December 10th. So click, call, or visit a store today. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. New X1 double play and triple play customers only. Minimum 1 to 2 year term contract required.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 157, and this whole thing is brought to you by the most influential voices in the FC Barcelona community. I'm Dan Hilton, and I am joined today by Alex Truica. Alex, you were at the match on Tuesday. Does the TV do it justice?
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on your pod again. I'm glad to be your guest again. I think it does. To answer your question, I think the overall perception has been that Barca got really lucky with the goalless draw in Dortmund, because they have been the inferior side, and even from the stadium, it was the same. Yeah, the same feeling. Thanks to Ter Stegen, they salvaged the point, but without him, they would have lost, and deservedly so, in my opinion.
Well, I would say, what's that? I guess the question is, what's that atmosphere? So we saw there was circulating that confetti, the yellow confetti that was perfectly orchestrated. I mean, what just is that feeling in that stadium there?
It is something special, I have to say. I mean, everybody knows the famous yellow wall, mm-hmm. Where I think 25,000 people usually stand, like they are not even seated, but they stand in regular Bundesliga games. Now in international games, Champions League, for example, they are not allowed, because you're not allowed to stand in these games. So they are seated, the people. But still, that wall is something you can sense, you can feel, even on television you can see. And then they are obviously also doing these great pyrotechnic stuff, or like these typhos or stuff like that. So it's really something special, especially when the teams just enter the pitch. There's like when they sing the anthems and all cheer the players' names. It's really like it gives you goosebumps. I have to say it's absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it was what I said it to you, but as an English speaker who's dabbled in German, I find that the chorus of a German song to start. Now, obviously, we always know with Liverpool, "You'll Never Walk Alone," that's one of the English ones that comes to mind. But it seems like all the German anthems, there is something to be said about 50 or 60,000 Germans. Just the way the language has a power to it that I think really does create an atmosphere. This is, again, just from a native English speaker, but certainly Dortmund has that effect. And as much as yellow might not be a strong and terrifying color, again, in unison, that yellow and black, it does make for a beautiful sight, I would say, just looking at the pictures and things like that. But some other things that we're going to talk about today, other than just your experiences at the match and what you saw physically there, including Luis Suarez, we'll talk about Alba getting injured and some of those things. But where we have to start today, Alex, is with Ansu Fati, the 16-year-old. You ready to go?
Yeah, sure. Hit me.
All right. So we are doing La Ronda today. More questions from our closed Facebook group, which you can tap in to the closed Facebook group. That's where we get all these questions from. Then we have one or two others as well today. But this is where they come from, and we start with the Ansu Fati talk. It is basically serving, for those familiar with our regular programming, La Ronda is a listener questions, but sometimes we do a La Gran Pregunta. So for all intents and purposes today, our La Gran Pregunta is about Ansu Fati, and it's these questions from Christopher and Cole. Where is the best place, or what is the best squad for Ansu Fati to spend the 2019-20 season in? And Christopher's question, very related to that, what is the best path to develop Fati without making him the next Boyan? And what effect with this, as well as Carlos Perez's emergence, have on Dembele when he returns? So let's actually table the Perez and Dembele part of that and just talk about Ansu Fati and focus on him for a minute. Alex, I guess I'll ask you bluntly, should I say where is the best place for him this season? For you, or where do you think he'll wind up? Because I think those might even be two different answers for you.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I was a bit surprised that he started against Dortmund.
I think a lot of people
because it was a huge occasion, and like against such a great opponent in such a terrifying stadium and such a terrifying ground, to start as a 16-year-old with like three professional games to his belt was something special, something surprising. I expected Carles Perez to start because he's a little bit more experienced, even like 5 years older, and just has more regular games to his belt. But yeah, Valverde trusted him. He did okay, Fati, but you could still see, and this sounds harsh, but I mean, it's the truth if you face it. He was a kid playing amongst senior players. I think it's fair to say that. So maybe the game came a little bit early. I don't think it will have much of an impact on him as a player in terms of his mindset or in terms of his confidence. But I think for Barca, maybe in retrospect, it would have been better to start Perez there, even though, Barca got away with a draw in the end.
Yeah, I don't, and again, this is me watching on TV, but I want to push back a little bit. I don't think he looked completely out of his depth, though. I think that the performance that he gave was one that someone like Perez could have given that same performance, right? I just think that he is 16, and so the things he does, we kind of can write off that he is a teenager when he does those things. But in the same regard, I think that you put a lot of different players that Barca had over the seasons in those positions, and So I even go back a few years now. He is riddled in some terrible news here, so I hate even having to bring up an Arda Turan. But I think about a performance that Arda Turan had that was at a third or half as good as even what Fati did, right? So I tried to forget that he was 16 in that performance, and I would say I thought it was on par with a lot of what we saw from Barca yesterday in terms of, again, we're going to talk about Suarez later, but if you were to ask me, did Ansu Fati have the better match or did Suarez have the better match? I'm not sure that you could go with the experienced world-class striker. You might have to say that, well, they were both largely ineffective, but does that make sense? I mean,
Totally. Regarding that, I think where we go from here is now that Dembele will come back, because just today he trained with the team again, so it looks good that he will be back maybe even this weekend or maybe the week afterwards. And I think then when Dembele is back in the squad, we will see less and less of Fati naturally, because right now Fati is the only speedy winger the squad has. So that's why he obviously was chosen to play in the last couple of games, because Barca and therefore Valverde just lacked this tool to have. Right, a player who can run against opponents, who can take them on, who plays with bravery, with guts, with confidence. I think Fati is all that, but also he's literally a kid. Mm-hmm. So from now on, I think we will see less of him as long as Dembele stays fit, which is probably even for him the best, because he is only 16 years old, right? He has to get regular playing time at the youth level, be it in the third division team at Barça B or even at the Victor Valdez side, right? The Juvenil A, where he usually should play. Mm-hmm. So I think he will figure more there than at Barça's senior squad.
Yeah, I mean, the point to him being involved in the first team even is just what you said there, that we saw in particular against Valencia, Barca, their first team was crying out for a player that could get to the goal line, that could get all the way and take players on one-on-one. And you're right, they just didn't have somebody that profiled in that way, the way that Fadi does, even at his, again, regardless of his age. And then you also bring up, you're right, there are then three places where he could really be effective here. And I think that there's not necessarily a right or perfect answer to where he goes or where what's best for his development, because what's best for a player's development winds up being in hindsight. I always think of the great American cautionary tale about Freddie Adu, who makes his professional debut for DC United at 14. And obviously now he's been for, I think he's played for 12 or 15 or something clubs, and he's been in the Finnish fourth division, and he's been in Turkey, and he's been all over the place, because it just never worked out. And for Barca and Kule's, Boyan winds up being that name that's always spoken about. But the thing I will also, again, push back a little bit there is that what seems to be assured to me about Fadi is he's well aware of his position. And I even noticed when he was switched from the right wing, which wasn't really working, and he swapped back with Antoine Griezmann to be on the left where he was more comfortable. He found the game a lot better in the latter half of that first half when that change was made by Ernesto Valverde. And for Fadi, the way that Boyan had to impact games and make and have a role where I think for Boyan, without scoring, it was seen as a failure, because again, Boyan was playing a little more centrally and the pressure on him was a little bit different in the middle of the park, and maybe his body was a little underdeveloped for what he was being asked to do. But for Fadi, it's a lot of one-on-one matchups on the wing, just letting him find the game. And it's clear that whether or not he's scoring from his position is a little bit more of a bonus. So it really is just whether or not he can be effective on the wing. So I come down on the fact that if the first team needs him, will he play, or is it best for his development all around to just train with the first team, which he will. Obviously, he'll be training with the first team now, I think, pretty much across the board. But the thing I think the club is also understanding, as you mentioned, when Dembele does come back, and Perez, I think, is now a first team member, we can be confident with that. But with Fadi this week, news reporting that he'll probably get his Spanish citizenship, and then he'll be gone for a month to play at the U17 World Cup. He was also named to the UEFA Youth League roster, and that's a big point as well, that I think Barca still sees him returning there. And so I think, is he going to be a part of the first team? Only if the first team needs him, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's what it is. But I think it's not a bad thing. I also want to just remind people that it's not a bad thing that he's probably going to be playing for Barcelona B and Francisco Pimienta all season long. And that might be best for Barcelona B, because they just haven't, they just seem to be missing that attacking punch again for the second or third year in a row, that they just don't have that attacking force they need. And then the Juvenil A's as well. I want to remind people that this Juvenil A squad is that side that would have Pablo Moreno and a bunch of other talents, you know, for the big La Masia talents and Exodus that we always talk about. That that current Juvenil A squad is that team that lost all those big talents. So Ansu Fati and Iyash Moriba, who we talked about, Iyash Moriba might be the age of a Juvenil B, but he's going to be playing with Juvenil A all season, and sometimes as he already made his Barcelona B debut. So for Moriba and even Fati, where they wind up at any point in any weekend isn't necessarily a bad thing, that it might be a different place, if that makes any sense, where they could play for Juvenil A one weekend and then play for Barca B the next, and then potentially be on the bench for the first team, not Moriba, being Fati. And that's not a bad thing. I think just bouncing around and having him used and utilized by the teams that need him, I think these are just challenges. It's just changing what he's seeing. It's changing the competition. And clearly, I think he has not looked completely overmatched at the first team level. So as much as they need him is fine. But other than that, everything else is, I think, is icing on the cake. I don't think it stunts his development as a 16-year-old to play at Barcelona B or the Juvenil A at all. I don't think it stunts his development.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And also, since you're the guy who asked the question, Christopher, I think it was, talked about the comparison with Boyan. I think that's a bit Well, maybe not the best comparison, because we should not forget that Bojan had and even admitted to having mental issues. So you could not, you should not take this as a comparison to every other young player who suddenly becomes the next big thing, and then you talk about him, yeah, but what about the Bojan comparison? Because not everybody has these issues. So they played a huge part. Then obviously his career path played a huge part. You could also say in hindsight that it wasn't maybe not the best decision to go to Stoke City, because for a technical player like Bojan, maybe in playing in such a team in the Premier League has not been the best, yeah, the best decision career-wise. So yeah, the comparisons are maybe a bit flawed, to say the least. So yeah, so much for that.
Yeah, you kind of walked me right into a great plug here. I want to plug the YouTube channel that was done put out yesterday, where I basically compared Ansu Fati to some of the other contemporaries he has as a teenage winger. And for the guys that have already made an impact or basically are on the peripheral of their first team as well, a lot of them were 19 years old. I mean, and that's how rare it is that 16, the six is the really important number here, that you might even see some 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds making an impact at certain clubs. Again, you got to watch the YouTube video to see the names I give you. But you'll notice that even a Callum Hudson-Odoi, this was the interesting thing as I'm doing the research, he did have that Achilles injury for Chelsea that did limit his time. He probably would have had more time in the Premier League with Chelsea last year. But he is yet to make a Champions League appearance even. Right, he was good, and that's because Chelsea weren't in the Champions League; they were in the Europa League. But I wonder if he would have even made a Champions League appearance last year if he had featured in. But now he's 19, coming back from this injury, and he's made less appearances, scored less goals, and collected less assists than you think. Right? It's these big names that we know about for years and years and years. So Fati might have been a name that we started to hear about this year. It just how happens that he was good enough to now feature for the first team. So now we know about him, and we put him in this class with these 17, 18, and 19-year-olds, but he still is only 16. So that is really, I think to me, that's the most important number there that we're talking about. That again, if he was 19, it would be a different conversation. But
Yeah,
it's
true.
just, it's incredible that he is just 16 years old. I think that's, I can't, I know I'm repeating and being repetitive with that, but I think that's just a point I want to hammer home that physically and as a footballer, he is 16. As you've mentioned as well, mentally, the difference between a 16-year-old and a 19-year-old, it can be leaps and bounds, but it also might not be, if that makes any sense, right? The pressure on a 19, there might be a 19-year-old who feels the pressure and the heat and is has a much more difficult time than potentially this 16-year-old. It could be the same thing for a 22-year-old, right? Any young player,
Yeah.
basically from the ages of 16 to 23 or 24, when you really are a full professional and a fully formed professional adult in that way, and you've had enough hardships in your career being like 23, 24, that you've had to develop and you almost have become the player you're going to be. But basically in that whole window, that 6, 7, 8 year window, I think every player is different and develops differently mentally, physically, technically, all those things. So I think Fati, what makes him so surprising is he does look like he's 18 or 19, not 16.
Yeah,
So
true, true.
it does change the scope a little bit. But would you like to move on, Alex?
Yeah, let's move on.
So we are going to
Sure.
move on to more negative news. You had to see in person, as Miner asks, with Alba injured, and he is confirmed to be injured for a few weeks, will Nelson Semedo take over the role of left back, or will Valverde allow for Junior Firpo to develop a connection with the team on the field? Alex, Nelson Semedo did not get very rave reviews yesterday, and there seems to be a lot of negativity about him on social media at the moment at the right back position, but I thought he really struggled when he moved over to the left. Is that what you saw at the game?
Well, I think from now on, Firpo will feature as the natural backup for Alba, because they bought him for that. He just wasn't in the squad, if I'm not mistaken, against Dortmund, because
Right.
obviously they didn't see it coming that Alba could get injured. But from now on, pretty sure Junior Firpo will feature. Regarding Semedo, I think he did quite okay on the left side. I don't think he had a poor game. I mean, the penalty was clumsy he gave away against Jadon Sancho, but other than that, I think he did okay. I mean, he played out of position, even though it's both a fullback position, but it's still weird to play as a right-footed fullback on the left side. So think he did okay overall, but we won't see him playing there from now on. Now it really should be Junior Firpo's time.
Yeah, I think we say it should be, but I do wonder to see. I think for me, we argue that it feels to me, of what I've seen of Jean-Claire Todibo, that it could be Todibo time as well. But there are certain players that take a little bit longer to get integrated into Barca's first team than we'd expect. So I think until Firpo's on the field, I can't really believe that. And I'm going to say that it could potentially be Sergio Roberto and Semedo at those fullback positions in the meantime. I'm not completely taking that out of the equation, right? Because would you rather have Semedo and Roberto being the two fullbacks, or would you rather have a guy that Valverde just doesn't really trust? And to the point about Junior Firpo is he was good against, not against, but for Real Betis. But if you actually look at his career trajectory as well, he's really only been a full professional in the way that we consider Junior Firpo being this great young talent for about the last year and a half. So there isn't really a big first team professional sample size for a guy that also got injured for much of the second half of last season that I think stunted his growth last season a little bit as well with Real Betis. But yeah, for me, I think Firpo should be the answer. And Minor, I think your guess is as good as ours as to whether or not Valverde will be putting and asserting him in. But the other thing I would say about the schedule coming up, you know, you don't want to overrate a team, or underrate rather, a team like Granada, who actually have been pretty good to start this La Liga campaign, having been promoted. They seem to have, if you remember Granada when they were sent down, they were just a shambolic team that had too many guys on loans, and from the top to the bottom, management down, they just didn't seem to have a footballing vision. But Granada has really rehauled everything. They are using a team largely to help them get promoted, and they did add a few, like Darwin Marchis. They've added a few quality players as well that seem to fit in well with the squad. So Granada have played well and should not be taken lightly. But that said, Junior Firpo did play for Real Betis. He's a first-team player, and he should be able to play against Granada. San Diego Todibo, you know, these are Valverde should be able to trust those rotation players. They're not just complete scrubs. They're not just guys being brought up from Juvenil A or Barcelona B or wherever it may be that Valverde wouldn't trust. These are established first-team professionals. So I think it's time to definitely trust them. Well, a guy that we have to ask about trusting, Alex, is a question from Michael. Is this the end for Luis Suarez, right? Do we have to continue to trust him as the number nine? Or is it more about a lack of fitness, you think, coming up? Alex, did he look as bad in, I keep asking this, but did he look as bad in person as the TV told him, or is it he just not getting enough service yesterday?
I think it's a service thing. The team clearly lacked cohesion in the plan, a structure to go forward. And obviously, if you're the number nine or the center forward, you need service. You need a functional team who serves you balls, who serves you, who gives you chances on the plate, more or less. And Barca didn't have that, so I think it's more due to that. Also, we should not forget he has been injured. I mean, he played 30 minutes the game before at home against Valencia, and now he started right away against one of the most complicated opponents away from home. So we should not be overly harsh, or let's take into consideration the circumstances. So yeah, I think it's more to the fitness, due to the fitness thing, and also due to the team playing poorly as a whole, and that's why Suarez looked rather poor against Dortmund.
Yeah, you bring up some good points. At first, we start with Dortmund, the fact that they have reinvigorated their squad more than even recent seasons. This is the best Dortmund squad we've seen, I think, arguably since under Klopp, or particularly maybe even under Tuchel. But I think this is the best Dortmund squad in terms of their squad building that we've seen in quite a few years now. And they shouldn't be taken lightly on the road. I agree with that. I said I would be happy with a point, and that's what Barcelona got. So I think mission accomplished. And in terms of Luis Suarez, you're right, where against Valencia for 30 minutes, I mean, he was incredible. And to that point, I don't think it's so much a mental thing about Luis Suarez can't get an away goal in the Champions League or anything like that. I don't think that he's considering that. But when they're in that kind of atmosphere, tactically, I don't think it's a bad idea to bring him off the bench, because Antoine Griezmann in that game was, I thought he was, other than Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, who was the perfect player in that match, but I think for Antoine Griezmann, he actually wound up being the perfect piece needed to run with Dortmund. And I thought Griezmann was the best player for the first 20 minutes of the match for Barcelona. And there was a minute, I spoke about this on the Patreon, but there was I think it was in the ninth minute, Antoine Griezmann and Marc-Andre Ter Stegen are the two closest players to one another, as Dortmund had just, you know, basically that was the first time Dortmund had gone forward at all, even in the match. And so, you know, we're 9 minutes in and Griezmann is standing next to Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, and I'm going, how is that? How did that happen? What is going on that field where those two are next to each other? And that's just a credit to Griezmann that his work rate yesterday was incredibly good. And when Messi is able to get back to fitness, now obviously Dortmund will be at the Camp Nou. But as far as an away match to Inter or a more difficult Champions League, hopefully more difficult Champions League ties down the road, on the road, I think you consider actually keeping Suarez on the bench for those. And if you're going to be absorbing some pressure like that, or if you're playing an opponent like Dortmund that's going to build up with possession, that's going to have the legs and is still going to press possibly, and it's going to be a more fast-paced game in a possession style, as odd as that sounds, and you're going to play a swarming attack like Dortmund, maybe you know that you're not going to get the service of Suarez required to bring the best out of him, and then you tactically adjust there. So maybe Suarez winds up just changing his role a little bit. So instead of saying he's washed up or we need to move on from Suarez, I think you look at that transition that had with Xavi or with players that are certainly losing a step or two. I think there's a role for Luis Suarez that isn't just merely... It could be an Adarith of Athletic Bilbao, who's also much older. He's 39. You know, he's got a few years on Suarez. So it's not that we're going to just put Suarez on the bench and bring him off in case of emergency, but it's rather there. I think it might be time to start picking and choosing your battles once everybody on Barcelona gets back to full fitness, including Dembele and Messi. And maybe there are situations for Suarez, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we should also not forget that... He had a thin squad in attack, like as we mentioned, Dembélé was injured. So if you have a fit Dembélé maybe on the bench, Valverde surely would have thought about subbing Suarez off, putting Griezmann in the middle as the number nine, and then subbing Dembélé on the wing. So you could have could have changed something up front if he wasn't happy with Suarez, or if Suarez was just not 100% fit or lacking match rhythm or tired or whatever. But he didn't have Dembélé, so that's why Suarez continued to play the full 90 minutes. So we should not forget about that, right? He had to play because there was no other options. Also, we should not forget that Suarez played against one of the best center forwards in the Bundesliga, maybe even the single best one, Mats Hummels, who had an absolutely astonishing game. He was world class, just as the whole Borussia Dortmund defense has been. So they've been really, really good, as we mentioned before. This was a really, really strong side, a strong defense. So it was all around very, very difficult for Suarez. Even if he would have been 100% fit playing for, I don't know, a month straight, he would still have struggled against this strong side. So yeah, there are different, as I said, different circumstances coming into play here. From now on, I could totally imagine, like, if Suarez plays, say, let's say a poor first hour or something like that, that maybe Valverde takes him off, puts Griezmann in the central forward position and puts Dembélé on the left and Messi on the right. So I could see this happening from now on, like Suarez fading out slowly but steadily, because yeah, he is, I think Suarez is 33 or maybe 32 years old, so yeah, he's obviously in a period where he will slowly but steadily decline, or he already declines, which is just a normal thing in this age. So yeah, as I said, I think we will see him probably fading out more or less, maybe starting more games on the bench or coming in late or playing only 60, 70 minutes and then making room for maybe Fatih, Dembélé, stuff like that. So yeah, it's interesting to see where Barca and Valverde are going from here.
Yeah,
for the rest of the season.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this could be his final season, but you're right, it's still a long season. And as we mentioned, at 32, his knee injuries, and what is the greatest worrying sign about Umtiti, that for professional athletes like that, when they start to get knee injuries, Suarez's knees never, I can guarantee that he never wakes up and go, my knees feel great. I feel like I'm 20, right? There's always going to be something there. There's always going to be a weight. There's always just that, those little nagging pains. And they just get worse as the years go on when you have knee injuries. Like we've seen Suarez have, like TD has dealt with. And so for Suarez, yeah, this might be his final season, but he still has a lot to give. And you're right. I think his fitness might not have been great. But as I said, when you look at that schedule, even with the way Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid have looked this season, Dortmund away is the hardest scheduled game that Barcelona have to look at on the road, I mean. So I think now that a point was garnered from this, as I said, it's just one that it's hard to overanalyze. And yeah, I think Luis Suarez could, you know, there's some negativity for his individual performance. But the worrying thing about Suarez for me, as this question from Mataha comes, what can we do differently moving forward to improve defensively? Now, I know he's talking about the defense, but I want to then start this question, though, Alex, with a point about Luis Suarez and when Messi came on the field. I think one of the issues that we talked about last season, and not just at Anfield, but in general, one of the things that made that defense seem so wary to me starts at the top, even more so than looking at Lenglet and Piqué and their positioning. Or where the wingbacks are, anything like that. Because when Suarez and Messi are on the field together, Barcelona lose a little bit of that ability to pressure from the front foot, right? Especially when Messi lost the ball on two or three occasions in that game. Yeah, he did beat five or six players. We saw that one run, I think that was somewhere in the last 10 minutes of the match, when Messi just, he looked like he could have taken it all the way himself. But once Alex Witsel winds up cutting that ball out, then Barca are on the back foot, and it's coming the other way because Suarez isn't tracking back. Messi winds up, his momentum takes him forward, and he winds up taking too long to track back. And I liked Messi's effort when he came on the field yesterday. The first 10 minutes, I remember Hakimi that he cut out. I'm not sure exactly who it was, but I remember him coming back about 30, 40 yards and cutting out a tackle, and Barca was absorbing pressure, and he was a part of all of that. But yeah, I do wonder what Barca can do in terms of not having that press on the front foot. And we see how that exposes, you know, we saw with Rakitic and Busquets, who I don't think you're going to see much at all together this season, because that combination in the midfield winds up being a little bit too slow to cut out the counterattacks when two of your front three aren't really giving the required press to put an opponent's back line under pressure. And so line-breaking passes are possible for an opponent of Dortmund's quality. And that puts Lenglet and Piqué on an island, or islands that we wind up blaming them for. And one of the other things I would say improving defensively is that the combination of Piqué and Lenglet, for as good as they are, I think, in terms of they're both good in the air, and I think they're both in a tackle, in a one-on-one tackle, but in terms of pace, the two of them together wind up just losing a little bit, and they don't necessarily dribble into that space as well, which offensively opens things up and then puts them in better position to deal with a counterattack in a way that, you know, Tadebo is way less experienced and is not the guy that I would have started in that match at all, but it's just a different kind of center back where he just is a little more dribbly, and, you know, he will make a lot of mistakes tactically and positionally, but in terms of just the whole team dynamic and defensively making that a little more solidified, I think, again, it starts at the top that I don't know how much Suarez and Messi, as much as they are the best of friends, make sense anymore against a team like Dortmund.
Well, I think one thing is very important for Barca and Valverde is the chemistry between Messi and Suarez, not only obviously off the pitch, but also on the pitch.
Yeah, it's hard to trade that, you're right.
I think going forward, they really function well together. They understand each other very well. Messi knows Suarez's movements and the other way around. Obviously, Suarez also knows Messi very well and how he moves and how he has to maybe block a defender or drag a defender away by making a run into space, even though he doesn't even receive the ball. So things like that come into play as well. Against the ball, obviously, you have a very, very good point that Messi is not very famous for tracking back. I think we can all agree on that, even if it might sound a bit as blasphemy, but it is the truth. He's not famous for doing that. Griezmann, on the other hand, is famous for tracking back a lot. We have seen him in Dortmund. He in parts, sometimes he even looked like he would be a left wing back or something like that. He defended in his own in his own box against Dortmund. So he has clearly like the mindset of working very hard, doing everything he can to help the team, even if it means that he has to defend. So that's good for the team to have that such a player, such a forward who works that hard and he tracks back. As I said, you can implement Griezmann as a center forward, then you would have a center forward who tracks back like that. But maybe, and we don't know that, the instructions of Valverde are that Suarez, when he plays center forward, should not track back, because maybe Valverde wants a focal point up front, you know, somebody who can then receive the ball and hold onto the ball. So we don't know the instructions there. If we say we criticize Suarez for not tracking back, maybe it was a fitness issue also. We should never forget that. We mentioned it before. He played only 30 minutes the game before, and now he immediately started. So maybe it's a fitness issue as well. Maybe it's a issue of being exhausted after 50, 60, 70 watt minutes. That plays a part. So again, different circumstances to give a proper answer to that. It influences the whole team, how they play against the ball. With Messi and Suarez, you might not have the most backtracking, defensive-minded players up front. So yeah, that plays a part. And then, yeah, you mentioned Lenglet and Piqué being on an island. There, if we talk about them, we have to talk about Busquets, who's also declining. I think it's fair to say that his legs are more and more gone. So he is the protector of the defense, but he cannot always protect the defense the way he used to be. Also due to his age, also due to just natural decline, obviously. I mean, he was taken off in Dortmund for reasons, right? Because it doesn't have happen really often that Valverde or any Barca coach takes Sergio Busquets off, but he did. So this has to do with certain reasons. He installed Frankie de Jong at the pivotal position, at the number six position, to shield the defense. And I think de Jong looked pretty decent there. He did a decent job, good job there. So we might see de Jong more at Busquets' positions from now on in this season. Maybe this gives more stability to the defense, because it's a younger player with fresh legs who can track back a lot, who can run definitely more and harder than Busquets can, who has more speed, who has more pace. So maybe this gives the team also some stability from the middle, you know? So yeah, different approaches, different reasons. Definitely an interesting topic.
Yeah, and I would also bring and add that when Busquets comes off, it's Rakitic who comes on in his place. And I think Rakitic is best suited. I think he is still the best suited midfielder to absorb pressure and deal with pressure in the way that Barcelona had really, and they admitted this in a lot of the post-game comments, particularly from Valverde, that they had lost a hold of the match a little bit. From a question from Eric that he mentions about, is it worrying that Barca seem to consistently struggle to maintain composure on the ball against these really good attacking threats? And Eric, I think we have kind of answered that question, that the first 65 or so minutes doesn't worry me because they're on the road at Dortmund. And I thought that the combination of De Jong, Arthur, and Busquets, they had their moments. And then the midfield of Dortmund had their moments, right? And they're both two of the best teams in the world. And so I wouldn't be so, so worried about all of that, because Barca are also still a work in progress integrating in De Jong and Griezmann and some of the important pieces to this team. So they're still working those players in, and the chemistry between those guys is going to get a little better, where Witzel and Thomas Delaney, and particularly Marco Reus, now they've been working together for two seasons now, that combination. So Dortmund is a little more solidified in their lineup. And as I previewed Dortmund, that you have Jadon Sancho, who does his job, right? You have Alex Witzel, who knows exactly what his job is. Marco Reus, who has his positions in his job, right? There's a stability to Dortmund that certainly at home made them even more difficult to play against. So as I said, for Eric, I think, you know, Barca's form has been worrying on the road so far this season, but I think that's just more of a lack of fluidity and continuity. And I'm going to try to see the glass half full on that one. So, and then Zach and Charlie also bring the fact that there seemed to be a lack of width. This is from Charlie when Fati went off, and we already talked about that really with, the Suarez-Messi combination. That's a little bit of what happens because of where Messi plays. And then there is a lack of pace, as Zach brings up as well, with the tactics that he says it's a tactics that Valverde employs. Or what can, well, he actually asked, what can Valverde do differently to employ the, or to change the pace on the team? And my answer to that, and Alex, maybe you have a better answer to this, but I'm not really sure what Valverde can do, because it's all, I think that's more about personnel than tactics. I think Barcelona just, it's a team that doesn't have a lot of pace, right? You look up and down the bench, and who could Valverde put on that's going to be the speed wizard? And that's why he's using a 16-year-old to start a match against Dortmund, because there really is not truly a lot of pace. And that's not the way that this squad still, for all the Griezmann and De Jong and I mean, Junior Firpo has a little pace at left back, but so does Alba. But I don't know where that pace is going to come from, because that's more about personnel, I think, than tactics.
Well, I have to disagree slightly there, because I do think there are serious structural flaws in Barcelona's games, and this is obviously Valverde's job to give a proper game plan to the team, whether you have players or you don't have players who have speed or not, or pace or not. You still have to implement a proper structural plan, a proper game plan, the right structure for your players to flourish in. And in Dortmund, we definitely did not see that. So we put a piece up on Barcawell.de, the website I'm the editor-in-chief on, where we talk exactly about this. So yes, they lacked the pace of Dembélé, because Fati is not an experienced player, but also the team definitely lacked the right structure. They lacked cohesion. They lacked, as I said, the game plan. And I think this is all the job of the coach. So there is something to talk about here, whether you have some players at your disposal or you don't have. Still, the coach should be in charge to provide or get a better game plan for his team, even if it's one of the most difficult away games you can have in the group stage. But still, Barca just have to do better as a team, and I think Valverde has to do better as a coach.
What if Santa didn't need 8 reindeer to guide him through the night?
Hey, Mercedes, map me to Kalamazoo.
Okay, mapping the fastest route to Michigan.
Or what if his sleigh could get real-time weather info?
Hey, Mercedes, what's the temperature on the 25th?
22 degrees. Rooftops may be icy.
Mercedes-Benz MBUX technology hasn't made it to flying sleighs, but it's available to you on the A-Class, the GLE, or GLC. And you can get them all for an exceptional price during the Mercedes-Benz winter event.
MBUX Command simulated.
Yeah, and one of the players that he has at his disposal but does not use, Ray asks, can someone tell me what Carlos Alenia did beside have a bad match? And, I guess I'll go first on this one, Alex, that for Alenia, I don't think it was just the bat that he had a poor match. It was, I think the more alarming thing for me is with the number of midfield options with them, with Barcelona unable to move on Rakitic, I think, unfortunately, other than Marc Cucurella, who's doing pretty well at Getafe after having a successful loan campaign at Eibar last year, I don't want to say that there's a little bit of jealousy when it comes to... I'm not jealous of what's in Real Madrid's current first team, because they seem to be better at sending guys out on loan than they do about reevaluating their own talent. There's the knock on Real Madrid, but the compliment to them is like Martin Odegaard, who they've had in the system for a while now, his loans have largely, particularly after being in the Netherlands for a few seasons, he's turned into a quality player, and he's been one of the better players in all of the Liga for Real Sociedad at the moment. Yeah. You look at Achraf Hakimi, he will remind you he's still on loan from Real Madrid. So Carlos Alenia probably should have been out on loan to a top side. He's good enough to kind of break in, but there's just too much midfield depth. And I think there were reports that a loan didn't work out and then he's going to fight for his spot. But until January, if maybe a Vidal, who we really haven't seen from, or, then Roberto is a midfield option, we'll remind you of that as well. And maybe if Rakitic leaves in January, but if he winds up being an important piece for Valverde, it's got to be Alenia, the odd man out, which is fine. Yeah. Again, he's still only, again, reminder, he was called up to the Spain U21s, right? Alenia is not a super old, experienced guy. It's not like we're giving up on his career. it is unfortunate to me that Barca's loans fail so much that you trust a guy to be training with the team and then not making appearances more than you do, because there's a fear that a loan is going to derail a Barcelona player's career. And then I think that's really the terrifying thing to me about Alenia, that it seems to be, it's not even about them using the Cantera. It's just more worrying to me that, that you know, they cannot utilize this really important structured system to give a guy like Alenia game time.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's really hard for him this season, and he didn't even make the squad, I think, only in the first match day, right? And
yep, he's been frozen from then, since,
From then on, he doesn't feature even in the squad anymore. So it is difficult. You also mentioned Rakitic and Vidal. They barely have had minutes this season. So, yeah, he should. I agree with you that he should have been sent on loan. It probably would have been the best for his development, for his career, to get regular game time at a decent level. We look at, you mentioned Hakimi, super good example. He plays at a great club. He plays international football. He plays in the Champions League. He gets a lot of game time to develop, to grow as a player. Another example is Sergio Reguilón, who now is loaned out from Real Madrid to Sevilla.
He's been good.
He's really good. Really good. He's playing for them, so he's a starter right away at Sevilla. He plays at the coach that knows him, Julen Lopetegui. Right, he uses him, who plays him in every game, I think. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Barca probably should have really looked into this thing, and maybe even said to Alenia, it might be the best for your career to go on a loan somewhere at a decent club. But they didn't. Yep. Well, and now it's really hard for him to get minutes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't spoken about Puig in a few weeks, too. And it's the same thing where, you know, he's been, as you say, Barca B, their form have not been tremendous this season. They haven't really looked great. But Riqui Puig, of what we've seen, has looked a little bit like a savior at times for them. I think he's been their best player again for the second straight year. No surprises, just because of the talent that he has.
I have to say, I absolutely loved Puig in the preseason. He looked really ready to be a part of the roster of the senior squad of the first team. Yeah. So I'm really bummed that he won't get any chances, because, as I mentioned, or as we mentioned, look at the squad in the midfield. Right, there are like, I think, 8 players fighting for 3 positions.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine Puig getting any minutes, which is a real, real shame. So, yeah.
Yep. So we'll finish this up. Last question from Armin. In the last podcast, you and Frances talked about how Barca is always expected to win. What if we're not the best team in the world anymore? Because objectively, we might not be. Is it okay to be content with a draw at a ferocious away ground?
I don't think it's a shame to not be the very best team in the world. I don't think Barca should call itself that, because look at Liverpool, look at Man City, right? They are right now, in my opinion, the best teams, the two best teams, and then Barca is like a little bit beneath them, because let's look at the Anfield drama, right? What happened to Barca there? Yeah, I think Liverpool is a step ahead of Barca right now. I don't think it's a shame to admit that. Sometimes teams are better than you. I mean, what can we do, right? I mean, should have gone for a different coach, probably in the summer. Yeah. That would be a way to approach the dilemma. But they didn't. So now, yeah. I mean, they are in the league, they are expected to win every game, obviously. Right. Especially if you have Messi, you're always the super high favorites to win the league. But in the Champions League, I think if you phase in the later stages, if you face Liverpool again, or Man City, or maybe even Juventus, it's really tough for Barca. So I don't think they will be considered the favorite in these matchups. So, yeah,
I would say yes, but in the same regard, I think it's a two-part. I think those are two different ideas. Even that going away to Dortmund, who, as I've said this season, it reinvigorated their squad, and I think it could be a two-horse race with Bayern Munich this season for that Bundesliga title. And I mean, RB Leipzig is at the moment, but just looking at the rosters, I believe it'll come down to Dortmund v Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. And then you even look at the way that Real Madrid got ripped apart by PSG yesterday, and Atletico Madrid and Juventus. That was an interesting match as well. Without Diego Godin after all these years, Atletico Madrid seems to have lost a little bit something defensively. You know, but that said, the thing about the Champions League, again, I want to remind you that Kylian Mbappe from Monaco a few seasons wind up breaking onto the scene, right? And you look at that Monaco 11 that now they're all playing for, whether it's Man City or, you know, or AC Milan, Chelsea, you know, that team has been picked apart one by one, sure. But in the same regard, right, Barca winds up, they were up against Liverpool. You know, it's the smallest of margins that if that corner kick doesn't happen, then Barcelona wind up moving on, and then we consider them, right? And then if they beat Tottenham in the final, Barca are the best team in the world, right? But to judge to use this the terminology that they are one of the they are the best team in the world, or whatever team wins the Champions League is the best team in the world, is kind of a farce, right? Because over the course of a season, that best team might be a little different, right? And so the one pushback I would give here is that to me there are tiers in football, right? And that I think Barca are one of the best teams in the world. And it's not that they are, whether or not the narrative is that they're a favorite in every match, I think is incorrect. You know, they not only do they have Lionel Messi still in their squad, but whether it's Barca, Liverpool, Dortmund, Munich, Juventus, City, Liverpool, I'm going to leave somebody out here, I guess PSG, if you will. You know, I think there's a top tier, but yet Tottenham can make a Champions League final. And but our perception of them hasn't really changed, right? We still consider them just a top six in the UK, in the Premier League. And particularly, I mean, hopefully they have a good Champions League campaign. For their fans, I mean. And same thing, Ajax last year makes the Final Four, right? And then do we consider them a favorite now? Not really, because they obviously got gutted as a team. I would say that Barcelona are still considered, I consider them, and I think a lot of people consider them, one of the best teams in the world. And when you're going up against one of the other best teams in the world, whether in that top tier, in a way, point is just fine, right? That's my point, is that if we were in a group at Liverpool and we got a point on the road at Anfield, that's what you need to do against the other best teams. And then when it comes time to the Champions League, it takes a little bit of luck and you just got to beat these other top tier teams. And in the Liga, you're right. They dominate La Liga. One of the top leagues in the world. Barca are expected to be the favorites, more than Real Madrid, more than Atletico. They're expected to win the Liga every single year. That's one of the best teams in the world to me.
I mean, I agree that on in the latter stages of the Champions League, there are no favorites. Everybody is more or less on the same level. And in the poor match or a poor day or even a poor mistake, goalkeeper mistake or a clumsy penalty can lead to you going out, being eliminated, or like not being attentive at the corner, right? Was essentially the last goal, I think, against Liverpool. Yep. Even small details like this matter and can lead to you being eliminated. So yeah, on this level, in these latter stages, usually the clubs, the teams are on eye level, on the same level, and very, very small details matter and make the difference. Still, looking just at Barca's squad, at their roster, they are definitely a top three side in the world. But unfortunately, not only the roster matters, the coach matters as well. And I do think there are better coaches out there, looking at Man City, looking at Liverpool, for example.
I agree with that.
Yeah, who make a great job, who are doing a really awesome job, maybe who have a little bit of an inferior roster, looking at Liverpool, for example. But yeah, these things matter as well. Klopp is, for me, maybe even right now with Guardiola, the by far the best coach in the world, or these two are by far the best coaches in the world, and they make a difference as well, especially in two-legged ties, right? So
yeah, that's a good point, that the manager has the ability just to be that difference. And I think you're right. I think Klopp and Guardiola are in that tier above Valverde. In world football. I agree with that.
No shame in admitting that, right? I mean,
I think people actually enjoy when we admit that. When we admit that
Valverde. I finish it off with, it is what it is, right? Yeah. Regarding the coach. I mean, what can we do? The club should have probably, in my opinion, taken a different decision in the summer, but they didn't. So... Yeah.
But the one thing I'll add to that is that Klopp and Guardiola weren't coming to Barcelona. So who other than Valverde was, you know, there was no top tier one, you know,
yeah.
Guardiola Klopp comparison to be brought in, right? Like whatever coach Barcelona would have brought in was going to be a step behind or a tier two level manager behind the best
probably,
in the world.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. It's yes, Valverde is not Guardiola or Klopp, but I mean, if that's the insult there, then that's the insult there. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
anyway, Alex, I really enjoyed the show. Really enjoyed you coming on today. And so I don't know how much of our audience also speaks German, but I know you do have a few surprises for them. I'd like to give you a second to talk about that.
And also, never forget, Google Translate actually does a pretty decent job translating German into English. So everybody who wants maybe to even read the analysis I mentioned on the Dortmund against Barca match can find it on barcawelt.de. I'm pretty sure in the show notes you provide your listeners a link, so maybe if they didn't quite catch the name of it, they can just click on it on the show notes. And yeah, they can also read me on Twitter if they like, Alex Troika, @AlexTroika. So yeah, get in touch, people, if you enjoy my stuff.
Well, thank you, Alex, for coming on. And thanks to you, the listeners, for tuning in again. You can tap in your app and check out the show notes. To subscribe to the show, you can find us on social media. We're on Twitter @TheBarcelonaPod or @HiltonD13 for me. On Instagram @TheBarcelonaPod. Close Facebook group where we got these questions from and we get questions from every week is tbpod.link/group. Deeper dives and discussions there as well. So it's not just the questions that we talk about on the show. There's actually a lot of conversations going on separate from what goes on here on the podcast, which is a lot of good deep conversation. You got to answer the three questions, though. Four questions now. There are questions. If you answer, you get in the group. If not, we decline you. And you can also help us out on Patreon. That's where I do the quick take match reviews. That's tbpod.link/Patreon. It also helps us continue to run the show, as I say every single week. We're also on YouTube, as I plugged in the show, at the Barcelona Podcast, where today, this week, was all about Ansu Fati and all about some of the wingers that compare to him in world football. So check that out on the YouTube channel and hit that subscription button. So thanks so much for tuning into the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Forza Barça.
Forza Barça. Ciao.
Welcome to Four Scores, a new podcast series hosted by Variety's John Burlingame. Four Scores will take listeners on a magical journey into the world of film and television composers. Listen wherever you hear your favorite podcasts.
This season, all your favorites have one home for the holidays. Yours with Disney Plus.
Merry Christmas!
Moana, Woody, Buzz, Captain Marvel, Darth Vader, and Homer will all be there, so make room! Make Disney Plus your home for the holidays, streaming Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, Nat Geo, and 30 seasons of The Simpsons. That's something to celebrate.
Merry Christmas to you!
All these and more now streaming. Go to DisneyPlus.com to sign up now.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.